D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. I've got to shout out this unnamed texter. And if this is you, you need to tell me your name so we can give you a proper shout out. But this texter photoshopped hairstyles on all of us. We're going to share it on our 102.5 The Game social channels. But Willie looks like Bret Michaels. Derek looks like George Clinton. I look like Richard Simmons. Richard Simmons is the rap.
Run DMC.
Yes. I look like Richard Simmons.
I was thinking Bob Ross.
Or Bob Ross,
the
painter.
A little Bob Ross in there.
It's a little Bob Rossy.
A redheaded Bob Ross.
Let's just put it this way.
I love it.
It's extreme.
I love it.
We'll share
But if
it.
You're going to do it, you might as well just go extreme.
I mean, my hair was not too far from that when I could grow my hair. It wasn't red, but it grew up. It did not grow down.
I'm just looking at, why did he put a skull bandana on?
Because he's got the hair metal. He's got the hair metal look. He looks like Bret Michaels.
Yeah. It is right out of that playbook.
Oh, my goodness.
Willie looks like the front man of a Poison cover band on this
thing. Yes, I love it.
So we'll share that, but we had a good laugh about that during the break. All right. So as we've mentioned a couple of times, if you have not been watching the Stanley Cup playoffs, what are you doing? The Stanley Cup playoffs so far have been outstanding. There have been some series that were uncompetitive in the first round. That does happen in all playoffs. But overall, I think these playoffs have been fantastic. Excellent theater. You're seeing new teams in the mix. Buffalo versus Montreal in the second round. Philadelphia in the second round. Anaheim in the second round. And as I'm watching these Stanley Cup playoffs, and I'm not watching every single game. I don't have time for that. But I'm watching as many games as I can. Here's something that I've been thinking about as it relates to the Nashville Predators. There appears to be a changing of the guard happening throughout the NHL, but I'm going to focus specifically on the Western Conference because that's, of course, where the Predators play, in the Western Conference. Anaheim defeated Edmonton in the first round. Anaheim starts its second round series against Vegas tonight, 8:30 p.m. Central puck drop. Although Utah did not defeat Vegas in the first round, Utah gave Vegas all it could handle. Wouldn't you say, Willie?
Absolutely.
So as I'm watching some of these other teams, I don't see Anaheim as a team that's going to take a step back. I see Anaheim as a team that's going to continue to build. Although Utah lost in the first round, I see Utah as a team that is going to continue to build. Although San Jose did not make the playoffs, they missed it by 4 points, I see the Sharks as a team that is going to continue to build. So I see, as I mentioned, a changing of the guard, so to speak, happening in the Western Conference. And my question is, as we await the GM hire by the Nashville Predators, where do the Predators fit in this changing of the guard? Because, Willie, we were talking about this off air. The first game between Minnesota and Colorado, by the way, the final score, Colorado 9, Minnesota 6. That is not a typo. Colorado was up 3-0. Minnesota tied the game at 4-4, even took the lead at 5-4. And ultimately, Colorado won 9-6. Again, 9-6.
And it was 7-6 with about 4 minutes to go, and Minnesota was pushing for the game-tying goal, and Cale Makar scored another one to make it 8-6, and then they got an empty net goal. And then they almost got the 10th. I don't know the last time somebody got 10 in a playoff game in a game that was fairly competitive, but that was a very exciting game.
And you know who scored in that game? Nick Blankenberg.
Good for Nick.
Nick Blankenberg had
and he had a Yakov,
Colorado's fourth goal.
And is anybody bothered by this? Why all of a sudden is it Yakov Trenyan and not what it's always been? Yakov Trenyan? I feel bad.
Players do this all the time. It's so annoying.
I feel bad if Yak never came to us. In all those years, he was with the Preds and said, call me Trenyan. Or or if that's really how it is. I'm puzzled by that. But I just can't do Trenyan.
No, it sounds too much like Funyun.
It doesn't sound like a real name, Trinion.
No. But it is fun to watch the guys with Predator. There's a lot of them in that series.
Yes.
But,
of course,
Nick
John
Blankenberg.
Hines behind the bench for the Wild. Yeah. Brian Hartman for the Minnesota Wild. Yakov Trenyan.
Yeah.
Nick Blankenberg.
Michael
Scott
McCarron.
Wedgwood.
Yeah.
Michael McCarron
thrust higher in the lineup with Joel Eriksson-Ek out, at least until game three. So he's playing a big role there. And there's talk of Michael McCarron getting like $5 million a year?
Something like that, which is shocking to me. But my overall point, is Colorado and Minnesota. Willie, you said this to me off air. Colorado and Minnesota might be the two best teams in the NHL. Oh,
I will,
not just in the Western Conference.
I'll say it now. I think the winner of that series wins the whole thing. Those are the two best teams left. Now, I said that a few years ago after Winnipeg beat the Predators. And Winnipeg, honestly, I thought had nothing left in the next round when they played Vegas. I thought they were better than Vegas in 2018. But they just were so wiped out from that series, they just brought nothing to the table and Vegas beat them. So that does happen. But I do think these are the two best teams in the league.
So you've got that. You've got Colorado and Minnesota. Willie Donick thinks they're the two best teams in the league. The Dallas Stars are going to have to answer some tough questions this offseason, but the Dallas Stars had 112 points
during
the regular season. I mentioned Utah being on the rise, Anaheim being on the rise. I would even lump in San Jose, although San Jose did not make the playoffs. They do look like a team that's getting there. So that leads me to my question again, Willie. As there seems to be a shift in the power of the Western Conference, as the Predators look to hire their next GM and plot a new course, I'm wondering where they fit in all of this. I'm worried the Predators could be left behind depending on what they decide to do.
I think it's a good question. I've always believed that you rarely, if ever, make a decision about your team based on everybody else around you. And let's look at the Titans. I do think there was a time where the Titans, I think we're facing the reality that the Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard-centric team, and you can throw in a few other names like, I don't know, Danico Autry, you know, some other guys that were aging. I think it was time to face the music that they were not as good as they had been, but they looked at the division and said, I think we could still win this thing. And they ran it back, and it did burn them. In a vacuum, would they have made the same decisions? I'm not sure. But I do think you just have to look at your roster and say, what are the best things to do with this roster at this time? That's how I look at it. But it's a fair question to ask because this has been – you could have asked this question a couple years ago, but it is starting to happen now as far as results of some of these teams that have been out of the mix for years and years. Like, you haven't heard about the Ducks from the time that Ryan Getzlaff and that group – ended their window until now. So they've been behind the scenes for years and years. Same thing with Utah, same thing with finally Buffalo, Montreal. Some of these teams have gone through some hard times.
I saw today on The Athletic that four of the teams in the second round, not necessarily in this order, Anaheim, Philadelphia, Buffalo, and Montreal, were four of the five youngest teams in the NHL to start this season. And another thing I've noticed as I've been watching these games, especially the game between Minnesota and Colorado last night, again, final score, Colorado 9, Minnesota 6. It's like they're playing a totally different game. Derek, you walked in today and you said to me you watched game one of the second round series between Carolina and Philadelphia.
Yes.
And you said Carolina looks like they're playing a totally different sport than what the Predators played this year.
Yeah, and it just shows you the difference, even a visual difference in a team like Carolina and a team like the Predators, where, you know, you just look across, it's just, you watching them and it's just speed and they just move different and they pass the hockey, you know, the puck different. And I know it's the playoffs, so everything is heightened. I get that. But if we're trying to, at least me, and I know there are fans out there because they want the Predators to get in the playoffs and be consistently in. And when you're trying to compare where this franchise is now compared to some of the teams that are still in. Now, listen, I know the teams that are in now are the best of the best. I get it. But you start to see how what the Predators don't have. Let's say that. Not how far back they are, just what they don't have. Because you're watching how one team moves and you're watching, you think about your team and how they move, even on their best night. And there's a clear difference. And not to say they can't get there, but at this present time, it's going to take a lot to get where those teams are at now.
And Willie, as we bicker about what the Predators should do, and you know where I stand on this, y'all know where Willie stands on this. Whenever I bring up the idea of rebuilding, a lot of you are quick to throw at me, look at Buffalo until this season. Look at Detroit. Look at Chicago. And I think when you do that, you ignore examples of teams that have undergone these changes much more quickly and have done so successfully. I will point to a team that
you're
watching.
I don't think Buffalo's done it successfully.
That's fair.
It shouldn't take 14 years. I'm not willing
to get it right.
I'm not defending Buffalo. I'm saying that whenever
there's some teams that have done a very good job at doing. To me, to do it right, it shouldn't take 7 to 10 years.
Okay, so let's look at a team that you're watching right now, if you're watching the Stanley Cup playoffs, who I think has done this expertly. The Montreal Canadiens. The Montreal Canadiens made the Stanley Cup final in 2021. That was that weird shortened COVID season.
Right, and that should be pointed out. They weren't a very good team.
No, they were not. But all of the divisions were mixed up. All the Canadian teams were in the same division. That was the year the Predators were in the same division as the Hurricanes and the Panthers and the Lightning. It was a weird season.
It was a weird season. I would contend that they won a tournament much more than they made the full journey. I'm not sure they would have made the playoffs if that season was regular. They were not good, but you got to give it to them. They won it.
So the Canadiens went to the Stanley Cup final. They lost to the Lightning that year. And to your point, Willie, that Canadiens team wasn't a very good team. But how many teams would have been fooled by the fact that you went to the Stanley Cup final? Hey, we're close. We went to the Stanley Cup final. Now,
I will say this, though. The decision was made for them.
By Shea Weber and Carey Price.
Right. They physically couldn't play.
Yes, that was the end of Shea Weber's career. He did not play after
and
that Stanley Cup final.
Basically Carey Price as well.
I think he played like 4 or 5 games the following season. He was done. So part of the decision, you're right, was made for them. The following 3 seasons after the Canadiens went to the Stanley Cup final in that weird year, they finished 32nd, 28th, and 28th. And in those 3 years, that helped them draft Juraj Slafkovský, number 1 overall. They drafted Ivan Demidov, number 5 overall. They found Lane Hudson in the 2nd round, the same year they drafted Slafkovský. So drafting, of course, is important. But the other thing, too, that has helped expedite this process is the Canadiens have made some really savvy trades. Predators fans, here's one that hits close to home. Justin Barron for Alexander Carrier. Alexander Carrier, I think, has been a really solid member of that top four defense. On the other hand, if it were up to me, Justin Barron wouldn't be on the Predators anymore because I'm not sure how good he is. But that was a savvy trade. They traded for Kirby Dach from Chicago. The Canadiens traded for Alex Newhook, I believe, from Colorado. They traded for Noah Dobson last offseason. They've made really savvy trades for players in that same age group. And now look at the Canadiens. Would it shock any of you if Montreal defeated Buffalo and went to the Eastern Conference Final?
No. Oh.
So I understand Predators fans, whenever I bring up the word rebuild, you immediately go to Buffalo or Detroit or San Jose or Chicago. But there are and I would argue, Willie, that the Canadiens are still rebuilding right now. The process is ongoing.
Yeah, they're ahead of schedule.
Yes. So it can be done. And it's not just about dropping to the bottom of the standings and drafting number 1 overall. I do think that's an important part of it. But it's also making savvy trades, making smart signings. And I do think the Canadiens have done a really, I don't want to go as far as to say masterful, but it's a really impressive job that they've done.
No doubt. Full marks for them. I continue to say, in terms of the Predators, they're doing it they have had a measured way of doing this. I would contend that they are doing some portion of a rebuild that they've been working on for about 4 years now. So it's not a rebuild in the sense of we're going to tear it down, because I still my contention is most of the time that a team, quote, chooses to rebuild, like a full rebuild, it is because they don't have an alternative. I don't think anybody looks and says, you know, we could go either way with this, but we're just going to go completely backwards. I don't think very many teams have chosen to do that. I think usually it's like, let's look at this and let's be real. We can't get out of this hole without getting worse first. So what the Predators are hoping for, to get back to what Derek was talking about, when you're watching these games and saying, how close are the Predators to being in a position where they could be in this mix and be competitive in this tournament? Like in the regular season, for example, they did pretty well against the Wild and the Avalanche. They beat them each twice. They all four of the games against the Wild were really close. But that's the regular season. It is different when it's all on the line for the playoffs. Everybody's gone to a different level. So I think the answer lies in, we've said this before, how much better and what are they going to get out of this deep prospect pool, which appears to lack the no-brainer, this is the guy that's going to lead in the future. Collectively, what are they going to get from this group? Whether it's those guys individually or, like Montreal and some other teams we've pointed out, you package a few of these guys with some draft picks to get the extra guy that is a difference maker. I think there are ways to do it, and that's why I say don't get caught up into all these other teams are going to be good. There's always going to be good teams in the league, but how do you make how do you get your team to another level?
And tomorrow, by the way, is an important day. It's the NHL draft lottery.
Are you feeling lucky?
Tomorrow at 6 p.m.
I've thought about this. What am I going to do? Like, what are we going to do to try the vibe? I don't know.
Yeah, I want to wear like Predator socks or
something. I got to think about something. Everything I've done before has not worked.
Yeah, so
they have never. Never won the lottery.
The Predators had much better odds last year when they finished near the bottom of the league. This year they have a 3.5% chance of receiving the number one overall pick. There's 1,000 possible number combinations. The Predators own 35 of those 1,000 possible combinations. So they have a 3.5% chance of receiving the number one pick. Here's the kicker. Last year, the New York Islanders also had a 3.5% chance of landing the number one pick, and they did.
Wow.
Let's all wear one sock during the show.
One sock?
Yeah, each one of us, one sock.
Okay, if you guys have ideas.
Okay, remind me of that tomorrow. I'll do that.
I also do want to.
You don't want me to take off the dirty sock in the middle of the studio. I think you want me to show up with one sock. That's a better way to do it.
A clean one.
Yeah.
By the way, it was Neil and Franklin who created the
thank you,
the
Neil.
Hair.
The extreme picture of the
thank
hair?
You, Neil. Yes.
Okay, so let's quickly go through. This is off the top of my head. I haven't looked this up. Adam, you can add any that I'm missing.
Okay.
But here is the Predators' history with the lotteries, as I recall. The very first year, the expansion draft, they had a chance for the first pick. Mm-hmm. It was, a coin flip between two teams. It was either first or second, and they got second. Which is, you know, not the end of the world, but mm-hmm. they could have had the first pick.
You could have had Vinny LeCavalier instead of David Legwand?
Right. Hey, I love Leggy. He was good. He wasn't quite as good as LeCavalier, but you know what? LeCavalier was not... you know, it's not going to be mistaken for Connor McDavid, but he was a really good, really, really good player.
Yes.
That was one. There was the year of the lockout where everybody had the same chance to get Sidney Crosby. 32 teams, all the same odds. Obviously, they didn't win that one. There was the bubble where they were thrown in the mix with...
all of the teams that did not make the bubble playoffs... and the teams that lost in the qualifying round.
So that is a total of how many teams?
Oh, man.
16, maybe?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
I think it would be around 16. They all had the same chance.
Yes.
That was...
Alexei Lafreniere from the New York Rangers.
Obviously, they didn't win that one.
Yeah.
And then there was last year.
Yes.
I'm trying to think if there were any other. I feel like there might have been one or two others in there. But they have just never gotten their name called.
So the Predators have a 3.5% chance.
This is the year.
And
well, there's also a second one for the second pick, right?
Yes.
There's two chances to get. There's one chance to get the first, one separate one for the second pick.
Yes.
So they could move up to two, which would be huge, too.
Utah moved up significantly last year, if I recall correctly.
Right. So there were two big winners in that.
I'm just going
to
say
this.
Which
moved the Predators from 3 to 5.
You're going to want to hear the show on Wednesday if the Predators win the draft lottery.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I'm going to be a pig and you know what if the Predators have the number one overall pick.
Right. Obviously, that would affect all the decisions you make, probably, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a seismic change.
Come on, number one pick.
So rub your lucky rabbit's foot, stick a horseshoe up your butt. I don't know. Whatever
Does
you do.
Anybody suggest anything? I am up open to suggestion. Like, what do we do?
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators and the Stanley Cup playoffs. As I've been watching, I've just been noticing all of these young teams playing well. They've got young stars. Anaheim has multiple young stars. Leo Carlson, Cutter Gauthier, Jackson Lacombe. Utah has Dylan Gunther and Logan Cooley. I'm noticing these teams in the Western Conference with these young stars the teams and the players look to be on the rise. And I'm just wondering, where do Predators fit in all of this? 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll shift back into the Titans and discuss the question we've sort of been alluding to throughout the show about Cam Ward. 615-737-1025. Speaking of the Predators, a reminder that tomorrow, BetMGM Sports Lounge, that's at Bridgestone Arena, the Predators are hosting their official 2026 NHL Draft Lottery Watch Party. Admission is free. There are going to be interactive games and contests. Ryan Johansson's going to be there. Nash is going to be there. The Predators energy team is going to be there. Also, Chase McCabe and Max Herz will be there. Live from the event starting at 6 o'clock. Doors open at 5. Party starts at 5:30. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Ving at 102.5 The Game. That was Brian Daboll talking about Cam Ward over the weekend. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. And we've been sort of alluding to this conversation throughout the day. We talked about it with Gentry Estes in the first hour. We talked about it with Teron Davenport in the second hour. The question, how will Cam Ward handle another offensive scheme change? Because, Willie, as you've laid out, we've seen so many quarterbacks fail because of the upheaval in the coaching staffs, plus the fact that when those coaching staffs change, they often bring in new offensive systems. So a lot is riding on Cam Ward. That doesn't need to be said. But I am wondering how he will handle this change and how Brian Daboll can help get the best out of him in year two.
It's just something that's been talked about so many years.
There we go.
Yeah, there we go.
It's been talked about so many years in the history of the NFL. It's a classic trap. We talked about it before they even drafted Cam Ward. It's all of the pitfalls that can happen to a guy specifically who is picked either first or in the top two or three, where you're coming in to a situation that has been obviously bad enough for the team to finish at the bottom. And so often, it leads to a lot of changes in coaching and philosophies, and we're not doing it well, so we got to change something. And it's never easy for a quarterback to have to go. How many times have you heard in your life, so-and-so, the quarterback, he's had to learn 3 different systems in 4 different years or 4 different coordinators in 3 years, all of these things. So I am curious on this particular one because Daboll seems to have a very good track record, a very good reputation as a teacher, as an offensive mind. I'm optimistic, but I do ask myself, will there be more growing pains than we want to admit because Cam Ward's got to learn a whole new offense?
Yeah, I mean, whatever he learned last year has to be from a, you know, playbook standpoint is thrown out the window. Now, the mechanics are transferable, you know, what he learned, footwork. They may try to clean up some things, but I think from that standpoint, I think he may be, you know, on track. Now, we're going to see what happens, you know, once he's out there and really throwing because of the shoulder surgery. But I think from a footwork standpoint, it's not like he's going to have to take a step back just because there's a new offense out there. I think he will stay on task with that. But learning a new offense, it does sort of, you know, put you back somewhat depending on your learning curve. And it seemed like You know, he picked up on the offense they were running last year very quickly, and that's why they, you know, decided that they were going to play him and play him right away, because he seemed to be picking up everything the way they wanted him to. And I think it would be no different here. Is he's going to pick up on the offense. You know, it may not look polished when they first go out there, but I think the more time they have together, they're going to get better. And don't expect when the season starts for everything to be hitting on all cylinders, because it's not. I'm going to tell you that right now. It's not. It's going to take a minute for the offense to sort of get going, because everybody's learning something new, and there's always nuances within, you know, different offenses depending on who's running it. So I'm not too much worried about that, but I know there will be a learning curve. And with Cam, I know they're going to continue to, you know, just give him as much as he can just, you know, take or, you know, keep within his, you know, his arsenal of plays that he's going to ultimately have to learn. And then from that, what you do is you take it down to what does he like to do best within his offense.
And it's not just Cam Ward. So
no, it's not. It's the whole team.
Ultimately, all of that will make it challenging for Cam Ward. I would like to believe some of the stuff, the optimism that you heard Brian Daboll talking about there, will apply to Cam Ward, that he's special. He's going to learn quicker than a lot of quarterbacks before him. But adding on top of learning a new system, you've got a first-year wide receiver who they want to become the man overall. There's going to be a growing pains there. Even Io Manor and DK, who had promising rookie years, to throw Gunnar Helm in there. Mm-hmm. Now they got to learn a new offense. Where do they fit in this? Will there be growing pains there? I think it's not unrealistic to say one or two of them could take a step back. A sophomore slump, or it just doesn't fit the same way in a different offense. There's a lot of things that could make it very tough, even though in a perfect world, you're like, oh, they got Daboll now. Cam Ward's in his second year. Oh, they got him a receiver. Like all these things you can get excited about. But the reality is they've got some major, major challenges to really look good. And it may not all happen early. That's why I'm still thinking they're at least a year away. But hopefully, through the tough times, they will continue to build that nucleus that you're going to need.
I think this time of year is going to be critical for this offense. And what I mean by that, I mean the time they spend away from the building, because they can only spend so much time over there doing stuff on the field and in the classroom, especially this time of year. It's going to be what they do off the field by themselves. Is Cam getting together all the wide receivers, which I know he will do, and how, because that's going to expedite sort of this learning curve. It's not just, okay, we're going to put in the hours, you know, and it's a lot of hours, but not enough. We're going to put in the hours when we're at the building. Okay, cool. All right. But what are you going to do when we're out the building? Because we have more time out the building than we have in the building. So are you going to make sure as a quarterback that you get all of these guys together, the receivers and the running backs, to make sure we are all learning this at a pace to when we hit the field, we can be more advanced rather than, oh, waiting until the next time we meet up as a group.
I heard Chase Daniel on NFL Live gushing about the Tennessee Titans. He says Brian Daboll is going to completely transform the Titans offense.
Dangerous to say.
It is.
Man.
This is the time for hyperbole. And I know that Daboll's experience with Josh Allen is front of mind for a lot of people, because Daboll gets a lot of credit for helping turn Josh Allen into Josh Allen. That's how he got the New York Giants coaching job in the first place. So again,
and there were plenty of people that were not sure what Josh Allen was going to look like when he got there, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to see what Daboll did with Josh Allen and hope that he can do the same for Cam Ward. I think we would all agree that Josh Allen is a special player. I'm not sure Cam Ward is on that level. We'll see, of course. But again, this goes back to the earlier conversation we were having about the amount of optimism that is reasonable to have about the coaching staff. I'm sure a lot of you feel better about Cam Ward working with Brian Daboll instead of Nick Holtz and, God, who was the quarterback's coach who called the plays? I can't even remember his name. Oh, Bo Hardigree.
Yeah.
Bo Hardigree. Like, I'm sure you feel a lot better with Brian Daboll working with Cam Ward than Bo Hardigree and Nick Holtz.
You know, I feel good. This is the reason why, because it's sort of some of what you just said about the Josh Allen. I think he, when you're talking about play, I think he has the ability to reach that level.
Cam does?
Yeah. Because we didn't think Josh Allen was Josh Allen when he got in the NFL. Remember, for 2 years, this dude was bad. He wasn't making the decisions that were going to win football games. And I know plenty of times I talk, that's what separated it for me. Like, when it gets in those moments, he always does something that ends up where the other team has the ball because of what he does with it. When Daboll got there, and subsequently after that, he started getting better with the football. He started being that elite quarterback that they thought they were getting when they drafted him in the first round. So I'm not going to say Cam Ward can't be Josh Allen, because I know what Josh Allen was before he was Josh Allen that he is, the MVP guy. He was a guy that was prone to a lot of mistakes, and they cleaned it all up. He got better, and now he's considered an elite quarterback. I think that can happen with Cam Ward as well. So it just depends on, you know, how this process, and it seems like Daboll, you know, they're good with it because they built a relationship before he got here in the draft process, and they're continuing to build on it now. They're getting him weapons, and they're doing the things necessary that is going to help him take that next step. Now, the unfortunate part about it is he got injured at the end of the season, and he has to work through the rehab of getting his shoulder right, and I just hope he comes back fully 100%.
See, I wasn't even thinking about that, but you're right, that he's also trying to come back from that, which on paper, it's just another challenge he's got to overcome. So I'm trying to keep this in mind. I will be the person, I promise you, in September and October, if it's not going super smooth, if they're not the talk of the league, like, oh, look at what Daboll's done, coach of the year, he's going to be a head coach next year. If that's not all happening, I'm just going to remind everybody, look at what they're dealing with. First year number one receiver, second year quarterback, new offensive system, a couple of second year receivers on the other side, second year tight end, significant injury that the quarterback's overcoming. Not a loaded roster. Like, all of these things point to there's going to be some struggles there. So temper expectations. I'm going to be that guy.
Coach Willie.
Coach Willie will be. Coach Willie's got no chance, because you know everybody is going to be like, where is it, man? We hired this guy. He's a bomb. You know, it's the overreaction. That's how the NFL works.
Wet blanket Willie, everybody.
Wet blanket Willie.
Wet blanket Willie. 615-737-1025. I kid, of course. We'll take your thoughts on Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Just laughing at Willie. Wet blanket Willie.
You caught something?
No. Wet blanket Willie. Oh, my goodness.
Wet blanket Willie. Rolls off the tongue. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Wet blanket Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. By the way, one texter says, wet blanket Willie. Sounds like the name you give a kid who wet the bed but grew up to be a Western outlaw like Jesse James. That's Wet Blanket Willie, the toughest buckaroo in the West.
Buckaroo. Good word.
Why did they call you Wet Willie?
You don't want to know.
That's like the trope that you always see, the enormous like bouncer or bodyguard that's called Tiny.
Tiny. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Was it Debo from Friday, Tiny? Was it his name, Tiny Liston?
Tiny Liston.
Tiny Lister? Tiny Liston?
I think it was Liston, not Lister. Liston, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
But a big guy like that should be named Tiny. No. Never. Never.
Mike says, D-Mace, Wet Blanket, and Vingan. Print the T-shirts. I think it would be Wet Blanket, Vingan, D-Mace, Vingan, and Wet Blanket. Oh,
WBW.
Man. Yes, that would change the name of the show. The Commodore Hour coming up at the top of the hour. Tomorrow, Trevor Maddich will join the program. A shortened program for us tomorrow because of Vanderbilt baseball. But tonight, in addition to Stanley Cup playoff action, we've got second round action in the NBA playoffs. Always a good time to watch the Philadelphia 76ers play the New York Knicks. It doesn't matter the era.
Now, did you hear Joel Embiid and what he said about the
I did not hear this.
The Sixers fans?
What he said here.
And this is not new in sports, right? Especially, I feel like it's become a bigger thing as time has gone on, and that is the visiting fans infiltrating the road building.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he said there have been some games where, I forget exactly the words he used, but he said it felt like Madison Square Garden South. You know, they've had too many. So he implored the 76ers fans to hold on to your tickets. Don't sell your tickets. Like, put him in the on the list now of teams that have done this, right? But the funny part is he said, if you need money, I got you. So you know the smart aleck flyer, you know, Philadelphia fans, you know them. They're probably going to say, hey, Joel.
I need about 20 tickets.
he's getting Venmo requests right now. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Yeah, then you got the Timberwolves and the Spurs tonight, which is going to be a good one, I think. Minnesota upset Denver in the playoffs in the first round.
That was incredible, by the way.
Rudy Gobert played excellent, at least the last game. He played excellent.
And his reward for being so good?
He has to
Victor Wembanyama. Congratulations, buddy.
I'm trying to remember all the guys that Minnesota was missing in that clinching
game.
They
were
unreal.
Gosh, their second lead.
They were missing Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
The guy, I can't remember how to pronounce
his
name, but he averaged like 20 points a game.
Gosh.
He's got a.
Is it the Connecticut dude? No.
Well, didn't Dante DiVincenzo get hurt?
He's hurt,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's hurt. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, he's hurt.
He went to Villanova.
Villanova, not UConn.
There was one more guy that all of a sudden showed up, couldn't play. And they still – guys, I was watching the stretch run. There was guys I've never heard of. The crowd's going crazy. And they're beating the Nuggets, who have won the title not too far.
Well,
too
the Nuggets was missing their power forward. What's can I forget the kid's name? He's not a kid, a grown man.
Aaron Murray?
Yeah, not Aaron Murray. He was playing. He didn't play well. Murray didn't play well the whole season.
Jamal Murray. Yeah.
Jamal Murray.
Yeah, no,
he didn't play well.
That was one of the keys series. Is they did a great job on him defensively. They made it very tough on Murray.
Aaron Murray is a football player.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon is what
Aaron
you're
Gordon,
of.
Yeah, he got hurt.
Aaron Murray played quarterback at Georgia.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Aaron
everyone.
Gordon was hurt.
Quite a while ago, too. Sorry,
everyone.
Now I don't feel so bad because I do that sometimes. I've done that in hockey broadcasts. I brought
and
up
then
a quarterback.
You got my Lakers and the Thunder.
Lakers, Thunder. Who do you like in that one?
Who you think I like?
Lakers in
like,
four.
But I'm saying
Lakers in five.
You think there's a chance?
Yeah, I think there's a chance.
Let me ask you this.
There's always a chance.
Let me ask you
Brian's
as a Lakers. Let me ask you as a Lakers fan. Are you enjoying the Luke Kennard experience?
Who wouldn't?
I mean, he's a
Who
Dookie.
Wouldn't?
It's a fun experience.
But when you come to the Lakers, you become more than
he
that.
Was a member of the Memphis Grizzlies, so
yeah, you become more than that. You elevate your game.
When he's feeling it, he just throws up the most ridiculous shots, and they fall right in.
Well, it's helping the Lakers right now. So they got a tough task against the Thunder, who are they're the number one overall seed, right? I think they are.
Yes.
Over the Pistons, because I know the Pistons are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. But I think the Thunder are the number one seed overall. But that's a juggernaut in itself with Shai Gilgeous.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. It's a mouthful.
SGA.
It's a mouthful.
Just say SGA.
But you can't help but be romantic about watching the Sixers and the Knicks Madison Square Garden.
Listen, if you are a basketball fan, there's some matchups, especially in the playoffs, whether it's the Lakers and the Celtics or Philly and the Knicks or Detroit and Chicago, or Boston and Detroit.
Yeah,
those match exactly. Yeah. Those matchups are nostalgic, man. So you're gonna get one when the Knicks and 76ers play.
And the Oregon at MSG, it's just a great theater. Mm-hmm. Like, there's yeah. just when.
Have that, you ever been to a game there, Adam?
A basketball
I know
game?
You've been to a hockey game there, right?
I mean, I've covered, I've covered many, I've covered many hockey games. I've attended multiple basketball games as well as a fan.
I have never seen a Knicks game at MSG, but I would say I've been to I went to MSG as a kid a lot, but it was usually for the circus or something like that. You know, I went to a St. John Syracuse game, which was a great game back in the day too, but. Just calling the games Predators Rangers, it's just such a great, it just reeks. Of course, played in Madison Square Garden. For what, Adam?
The NIT?
NIT championship, baby.
You took the train the wrong way, remember?
I did.
He didn't want to remember that part.
Missed the pregame meal. Had to run a lot of stairs the next fall, but cut the nets down at MSG.
But y'all won.
We did, but it's just a great venue. So, Knicks Sixers at MSG with the Oregon going, can't beat that. Just like when Montreal is playing at home, there is no crowd that is better at rising and falling with the flow of the game than the Montreal crowd. It is awesome. So those are worth watching just for that, even if you're not a huge fan of any of the teams.
That'll do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Trevor Maddich will join us for his weekly segment. And that's all I know so far because I haven't planned tomorrow's show. But we know Trevor will be on it, and you'll be there as well starting at 3 o'clock.
Be loved. Love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Monday. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us because we will not forget about you. We will be back on the air at 3 p.m. tomorrow because we be talking and you be listening. I love you. Peace.